Now on Classical WMUK, I'd like to welcome back to our airwaves Elizabeth Start, cellist, composer, and member of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. It's a series of what I'm thinking of as artist check-ins during this COVID crisis. Betsy, it's wonderful to hear your voice again.
Yeah, nice to talk with you too.
Maybe we should start with how you experienced April. It, as always, we were in the midst of an incredibly busy concert season, events planned left and right, and then nothing. Maybe you could take us through that.
Yeah, well, actually, it was March. I remember I was at a doctor's appointment on March 10th asking about, so you think we can fly to New York next week? I had a piece that was going to be performed at the Domena Center, and I was looking forward to being there, and it was going to be a quick overnight trip because I was going to be playing kids' concerts all those mornings with the Elgin Symphony, doing a piece that I'd written for that. And so it was a crazy week, and I was a little concerned, but and I remember my doctor saying, yeah, you'll probably be okay. We just have no idea at this point what's going on. There's not enough testing, all that, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, the next thing I'm hearing, well, those kids' concerts aren't going to happen. First we heard, well, we're still going to get together and rehearse and record them. The kids just aren't allowed to do field trips anymore. So we had, you know, something pulled out from under us, but still the promise of this. And about 4 hours later, no, the city won't let us into our venues, so we're not going to be doing that. And it was, and then a few days later, you know, for sure the New York concert wasn't happening. And, you know, I've sort of described it as, you know, having a limb chopped off inch by inch because you've just thought, okay, that won't happen and that really hurts, but maybe this next thing. And it probably wasn't until we were into May that it was like, really, 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 nothing's going to happen for a while. And it took a while getting kind of used to that. And of course, I realize in saying all this, in some sense, it's only music, you know, it's only live events. You know, if we're alive and healthy enough to be complaining about it, we're lucky. But still, it just, you know, for me and my musician friends, you know, music is a participatory sport, and we're, you know, we get energy from each other playing together and playing for people. And it's it almost felt very personal to me. I suddenly had all these great performances. I had a piece that was going to be premiered at the Kalamazoo Symphony September 12th concert, which is not going to happen in the way it was going to happen. So it's like suddenly I had all this great stuff and somebody just stomped on me. But I realized it's not all about me. so... took a while to get kind of resigned to, yeah, I can vacuum now and I can clean my windows and organize my stuff and try and address things that are lingering. And, kind of at the point now of wondering, well, when can I come out of my confinement? When can I come out and do stuff and play again?
You know, I think you can be excused for, taking it personally when the opportunities to share music and opportunities to have your music premiered are suddenly wiped out by the coronavirus. I did read that the virus was in New York City pretty early, so like in February. And so did you at some point belatedly realize that you kind of dodged a virus bullet there?
Yeah. I mean, we were, Pete and I actually went there in early December for the recording sessions, which was a great thing to be at, to be able to do the recording and editing right there with Tommy. I realized afterwards, you know, if they'd have shut down New York and shut the halls 2 days later, we would have flown there and been right in the thick of airports and public transport right when things were really getting hot. So, yeah, we did dodge a bullet. And And, you know, I was actually just visiting some friends this weekend, and they said they were just ridiculously sick with some viral something back in October, one after the other. And they're Detroit area people and had been on some cruises. And, you know, so they think that it went, for them it was, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks of horrible cough and trouble breathing. And so, you know, it's possible it was here even sooner. But now we really know it's here.
Well, I'm glad that, that you avoided illness and that you're still healthy and still productive. What were some of your alternate plans when performing became impossible?
Well, first, you know, it was really a very, very heavy grief time. I did go over to Illinois because I was going to be there anyway, and that's where Pete lives. So I thought, well, I'm just going to come over and visit. But then the lockdown started there 2 days before ours did, and I felt like I was fleeing the state at that point on March 21st. And, yeah, I started just kind of going through stuff and organizing, and, you know, I have a habit of going in the back door, being so busy, I just drop everything. I mean, I had boxes of Christmas presents I didn't know what to do with from 2 years ago. So going through things like that. And I've also been meaning forever to transcribe my handwritten notes from some trips, little journals that I did when we went to England and Italy back in 2013 and Vietnam in 2016. And I also in 2016 did a composing in the wilderness in Alaska. And so I spent time transcribing those out. And it was really funny. I actually had to ask my cousin in England, so what were they announcing at the train station? And it was the English guy who'd won Wimbledon. And she's like, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, so that's an easy question. Oh. And because I couldn't read my handwriting. Yeah, so anyway, I went through those trips. And, of course, it was nice, fond memories. And actually reminded me from the composing in the wilderness thing, what we were writing at a old mining camp in Yukon Charley Preserve between Circle and Eagle near the Yukon River. And we were, we had some time actually when we were waiting for the weather to clear for the plane to come back and get us. I was out panning for gold and got a little bit, and it had been in a baggie ever since. And now that's in a vial around my neck. So I was reminded of that. And yeah, so just little crazy things.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is composer, cellist Elizabeth Start. And it sounds, Betsy, like you were, in a way, by revisiting your journals of earlier travels, you created your own, you know, escape from the pandemic shutdown. I mean, able to meditate on places you've been and the effect it had on you. And I think that sounds like a very, really healthy and valuable thing to do.
Yeah, actually, I'm very glad I did it. And it did, kind of help me remember how things were and hopefully can be again. You know, sometimes you think back on those things and go, oh, my God, we were that close. we were like in a crowd. It was a good thing to do. And what I found difficult to do was to try and be creative to actually write anything. So I signed up for this competition called Rapido that's spearheaded by the Atlanta Chamber Players. And I think it's in its sixth year. And the idea is you sign up and on June 1, you get the information to write this piece and you must have it done on June 14th. And then going forward, once they pick people, they'll have some, you'll expand the piece, and then they'll pick from those people and eventual winner figured out of it. But I didn't really do it thinking of any serious competition. It was just like, this is going to make me write. And what was really cathartic about it and very smart of them is that the subject matter we got on June 1 was COVID-19 shutdown and anything related to it. So it was actually extremely cathartic to write. And serendipitously, I had participated in a online workshop with Christy Catt from
Tapestry.
Tapestry and Shara Kamen, viola player that works with them, and they did a online workshop on Hildegard and were comping me into it, inviting me, please, this is the first we've tried this, please participate. And I'm like, you know, I don't sing. Okay, well, I'll do this. And what was nice is that a little setting of a word that they gave me to be responsible for was to the word o edificatio, which is, you know, building edifice, also to edify. Mm-hmm. And that became my subject matter for the Rapido piece. And thinking about, we build this edifice, I created this very complex contrapuntal opening based on that theme, and then just brought it to an absolute unexpected standstill and suspended harmonies. And, you know, with little attempts to bring it back, and basically the piece then ends with this chanting that starts and kind of overpowers everything that's going on. And at the end, we're really kind of railing against the edifice that we've built. So it was like this incredibly apt thing to have dropped in my lap for that piece. Because I wrote the piece probably in 4 days, because I had an idea of what I was going to do, but I didn't know what I was going to use. And then that fell in my lap, and it was like, okay, this is it. It works.
Sometimes when you're composing a word or an event, kind of just breaks everything open and shows a path forward.
Yeah, because you know, if you have everything to draw from, it makes it harder.
It's,
you know,
too much.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I was thinking of revisiting some of my earlier pieces and taking a theme out of that, because that could sort of work conceptually. But and I do use a theme in the middle when we're just kind of slowing down and reflecting on the beauty of the world. I do use a theme of mine from before that mixes in there. But yeah, if the constraints are things that can spur you on. It's like, okay, I only have, you know, 10 little building blocks. What can I do with them? So it was a good thing to unstick me, though. I'm waiting to move on to all the other things that I need to do from that.
You know, one of the hallmarks of your writing is that you allow many different influences into it, things that are ancient and very, very modern as well. I've seen you play on, I think, a carbon fiber cello or some sort of electric setup. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you're still exploring electronics as well.
Yes, I am. I am intending to. I do have an electric cello. It's a Yamaha. It kind of looks like a praying mantis. Folds up, and I've had that since probably 2003. And when I first got that, I got some sort of boxes you use to process electric guitar, you know, a wah pedal and flanger and digital delay. And I love working with that stuff. But there are some limits to it, especially with the digital delay. I can loop, but I can only loop 5 seconds. So I can pile on, but it's only 5 seconds long.
And then it disappears.
Well, actually, no, it will retain it. It will retain it all, but then it keeps me in harmonic constraints.
Right.
I mean, once you set down these notes, you have to keep going with those notes. And yeah, you can clear it and start over, but you got to create a disturbance if you're going to keep playing, to cover the clearing of that. So it's fun to work with and an interesting challenge, but I will say recently, but it was actually a year and a half ago, purchase a large looping box, which can loop for many minutes. And so you can really create a structure, and it also has the processing, similar processing, things like flanger and things and filters and things like that. And I have yet to learn it. So that's one of my, I thought, well, I'm going to learn that during this time and create some pieces on it. And I will still, because we clearly have plenty of time yet. I do have a piece that I was going to be writing for this. Actually, I was going to get a draft in today, but that concert has been postponed from October 2020 to October 2021. So that's not so urgent, so I can retool. But the carbon fiber thing, I've always sort of wanted a carbon fiber cello for those situations where you're maybe going to be in a threatening situation with, like in a pit where it's really tight, or outside.
One of those unpredictable, like if there's heat, moisture,
Or tight quarters or pits where something might fall in and hit you. So I have picked up inexpensively, because I can be frugal sometimes, I've picked up like a plywood cello and a German student cello, and those have been my sort of beater backups. But I'm thinking about getting rid of those and getting a carbon fiber, because they're pretty indestructible, and they're actually, it will be a better instrument. It won't be anything like my real instrument, but it'll be something that I'll feel better about taking to an outdoor concert, because a lot of the orchestras are saying, you know, we're going to be outdoors before we're indoors. Once we try and actually play for an audience, it's going to be outdoors. That will be useful.
On Classical WMUK, I'm speaking with cellist and composer Betsy Start, a longtime member of Kalamazoo Community and the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. And we're deliberately not mentioning some of the other hats you wear today, because there's a chance we can come back and talk about the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music another time. But it should be, I think, mentioned that you're also experiencing this disruption as a music organizer who puts together a huge festival that takes place here, and we're all just treading water on events in the future.
Well, yes and no, actually. It's been kind of interesting, because I go back and forth between Zoom calls with my two orchestras. Since I'm on the musicians committee of both, and actually the union secretary treasurer here in Kalamazoo. So, a lot of those talks are a little bit depressing about, well, when can we do what do we think we'll be able to do when? So that's kind of depressing. And then with the festival, though, we kind of made this breakthrough where we just decided, you know, we don't have a staff. We don't have a bunch of artists who expect work from us, or who are, you know, that we're committed to as employees or whatever. So we've decided to do some very different things, and I hope you'll have me back so I can talk about them. There's some that are still hanging there, almost done. But they're basically things that involve experiencing music together in some way that's not just sitting and watching something streamed on a screen, because there's plenty of that going on. And it was just very liberating to go say, oh, well, we can do this. And one of the things I can mention for sure we've got scheduled is we're calling it Migratory Music, and it will be out at the Nature Center. September 13th is our planned date, and we're going to have different musicians from the area who represent music from different cultures in different locations in the Arboretum area. So you can come and you can walk around and be socially distanced and hear this music, linger to listen to a group or another, and hopefully it'll be a fun time. Mm-hmm. And a way also to since we're not able to bring in our usual big artists from outside and have normal concerts, we're sort of redirecting funds we have to give to local musicians. So it'll be area musicians involved in these things. You know, it's more practical. Plus, we kind of think it's sacred too to keep the money in our community and help out our area musicians.
So. Well, I will be calling you then in a few weeks, and
because that's just one of our ideas.
Yeah, getting some more details on this, Betsy. I do want to wrap up soon, but I would like to play music from a live performance, a solo cello piece played by Thomas Mesa, and of a piece you wrote. It's a part of a series of pieces, or is it a standalone, Echoes in Life?
It is a standalone piece. It's part of a series of projects that have come out of my giving the Elgin Symphony personalized composition as something they can auction off for their fundraiser. And this was the very first one that was won, and the woman who won it wanted a piece that was about her life. And she's a very fascinating woman. She's Native American, Paiute, and another people, but I forget what the other tribe is. And she was adopted into Western European wealthy family in Oak Park with, I think, four sisters when she was quite young, but was kept in contact with her aunt, who she later found out was her mother. So she lives kind of between these two worlds, the Western and the Native American, and back and forth. And so the piece uses a theme that is kind of reminiscent of a Paiute tune, and is then developed with more Western European techniques. And we have some segments where there's kind of a heartbeat or drum beat going on in left-hand pizzicato while a tune is being presented. And it's been very well received. Actually, one of the few things that I've been able to play lately live has been through the window to my next-door neighbor, who's an emergency room nurse, and finally said to me, well, would you play for me? So I thought, okay, well, I can do that. And I've played him a couple little concerts, and he just loved that piece. And as have other people, David Peshlakai, of course, Navajo ancestry, has played it a number of times, including as an encore in Germany after he played a concerto. He played that as an encore. So I hope I gave us time to listen to it.
You did. That's a marvelous backstory, and I didn't know all of the detail behind it. It's just a really beautiful solo cello piece, and I'm really glad to present it here on Classical WMUK. And my very great thanks to you, Betsy, for sharing your experience this morning on Classical WMUK.
Oh, thanks for having me.